Welcome to Smart Web Creators. In this podcast, you will listen to creators creating amazing things on the web and sometimes just me talking useful web stuff. I'm your host, Davinder Sinkanth. Let's get started. This is episode number 8 of the podcast featuring Paul Lacey on building web agency with niche and white label approach. Hey, Paul, how are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks, Davinder. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, welcome. It's been a while. I think this is the first time we are chatting, right?
In real life, yeah. We've tried to do it a few times, but you're actually one of the first people I met online in the WordPress community, probably, actually.
Yeah, virtual life. So before we get into the technical stuff, I want to ask you, how are your pets doing? 3 cats, 2 beaver-like animals. What is the count now?
So yeah, we got the 3 cats. We got Dennis, we've got BG, and we've got Harlow. Those are the 3 cats, which obviously me and you talk about, and I send you photos of my cats from time to time.
Yeah.
Whether you like it or not, I send them to you anyway.
No, I love them.
And then you send me all the cat gifts back. And then we've also got Susie and Lottie, who are 2 guinea pigs. There is a fish, but I don't know what its name is, but it does have a name. And
well, you can easily name that fish Gutenberg.
Good idea. Yeah, it's it's in the pond in the back garden. But that's it. I think that's it at the moment for the pets. But yeah.
Well, you've been making a lot of noises in the online world, or I should say very right positive noises. Like the GeneratePress redesign really caught my eye, and the focus shifted to your agency, Dicky Birds. So we'll talk about your agency. But before that, I would like to know a little bit of introduction, like what you've been doing in this online world for a few years, not the detailed introduction like you typed in the prep sheet.
It was actually very therapeutic to type that all out, but then I realized I crossed the entire thing out, didn't I? But I will do a shorter version because I know you've got a lot of questions, and I do want to try and get through those because there's some brilliant questions that you got lined up. So, I mean, I go back roughly 20, well, I haven't really counted the years, but I think I started in web in 1999. I did a work placement, which turned into a part-time job while I was still at university for a web design agency. But it was actually kind of like a web development agency. And they had a .com startup on the side, which was like an online magazine, like an online e-zine for kids. So it was kind of like, you know, reviewing computer games and stuff like that. And I managed to get a job part-time with them because I was cheap. I was a student. And I had a mentor there, a guy called Samuel Picard, who was just an amazing mentor and taught me a whole bunch of stuff. And then obviously the .com thing happened, and that company, you know, had some trouble with its internet e-zine. And then I moved to some other .coms, and again, I was doing like flash stuff, that kind of thing, you know, flash intros, you know. So you might have like a ceramic toilet company, and we would do a drum and bass style flash intro for their website. Everyone wanted the
cool flash eyes were like rage at that time, like small layout, but all the fanciness happening in a little small window.
Exactly. But and then from there, I worked for a couple of contract jobs after the .com boom had fully burst. And it was a couple of companies. I worked for a major bank, Capital One, and Disney. We worked for Disney for a bit, which was really cool. And then I worked for a company called Canine Media, who created a dog magazine and a cat magazine. So maybe that's where this has all started, this animal stuff. And but the cool thing about it was it was called Canine Media, as in the letter K, the number 9. And randomly there was a note in a window in their local village, the boss's local village, saying we do web design. It was just like a little note that they would do web design on the side. And someone contacted them who also lived in the local village, and it turned out to be one of the Doctor Who from the 70s, Tom Baker's agent. And he was like, oh, I saw your note in the window and just wondered if you could do us a website. So while we were at Canine Media, we ended up doing Doctor Who, the previous Doctor Who's website, which was insane. Wow. Through a note in the shop window. You know, like, yeah,
those were,
you know,
those
bed
days
for sale.
These yeah, days you can exactly. Scream with even Facebook ads, nothing would happen.
That's it. That's it. And then I ended up working for an arts organization for quite a few years, which was really, really cool. And then after that, jumped into working in a brand agency for about 3 months. It was insanely intense. It was, but I learned how to work fast. And I didn't really read the brief for the job and how far away it was. So it was like a 40-mile journey there and back every day, 20 miles there, 20 miles back. And they did do hours from like 8:30 to 6:30 every day. That was like the normal hours. And apparently that's quite common in some branding agencies and stuff. And I was just like, after 3 months, I was too tired to carry on with it. So I actually quit that job, and that's when I became a freelancer. So that was, and that was roughly 10 years ago, I think.
Cool. Now coming to your agency, Dickey Birds, now you also had WP Blueprint, which is your own solo endeavor. Now I want to focus on Dickey Birds. Now Dickey Birds, I came to know about it just this year, but you mentioned that this is almost 10 years old. So
yep.
What has been the journey of Dickey Birds in last 10 years? Because I know now it's at the flourishing stage. Like I think it's at the best stage ever in its agency life.
Oh yeah, definitely. Yeah. Yeah. 100%. I mean, you can find our website on the Wayback Machine. If you type in, or our old website used to be dickybirds.com. Uh-huh. So you'd have to type in dickybirds.com on the Wayback Machine. And you can see me with hair and Peter as well with dreadlocks and stuff like that on the photo. It's crazy. But what it was when I was a freelancer, when I started as a freelancer, I probably did a year of kind of traditional freelancing for different agencies and stuff like that. And then a particular agency I was working with, they were quite new as well, and they were growing quite quickly, and they'd done some, you know, they won a few awards locally in Birmingham, in the city of Birmingham. And so suddenly they were getting lots more inquiries. So I took on a role in terms of, instead of just developing the sites, we said, what should we do, guys? And I ended up being like an outsourcer for them, finding people who I felt, you know, had vetted and thought they were good enough to help deliver the projects. And that's the thing that I've spoke about in a lot of interviews before, which was my first failed attempt at scaling a business. failed attempt. There's more. But that was the first failed attempt. I think anybody who thinks that you can just go on Elance and just hire people and just expand the company like that. Sorry, Elance doesn't even exist anymore, does it? So
no, it's Odesk.
What's it called now? Odesk, yeah. So you can find good people, but the thing about it is, the lesson I learned then was that if those people aren't genuinely part of your team, they're not part of the team culture.
No.
They're not invested in the idea. So we ended up with about 20 people that I was outsourcing stuff to. And quite honestly, it was so stressful. And and then some things happened within my personal life as well, which were like clashed completely with the amount of micromanaging and late nights that I could do. I just couldn't do that burning the candle at the both ends. So that kind of imploded for me, that whole business model. So I don't recommend that to anybody, just going out and thinking, yeah, it's easy to do this web design stuff. You just hire a bunch of people and then you outsource it. Everybody's got their own personality. You know, developers have got their own way of working and designers have got theirs. But anyway, probably digressing quite a lot, but when that crashed and burned for me, I pretty much just walked away from a lot of the agencies that I was working for. I just wound down all the projects. I helped the major one I was working for. I helped them employ my replacement. I, you know, interviewed him and all that sort of stuff. And then I was kind of, I pretty much got rid of all my clients. I was back to square one.
So you scaled back down.
Yeah. Scaled back down. I think it's called in one of the books, Retreating to Business Infancy.
Mm-hmm.
But it was more almost like an experiment that just went wrong. But, the one guy who I did bond with really well during that whole process was Peter, who is my Dickey Birds business partner. Back then, he was just one of the people that I found on a freelancer board. And he was by far the most, you know, he was the best communicator, and he was proactive towards me. And so as a result, we became good friends.
So after all that mess, Dickie Birds was reborn recently, right?
Exactly. Like a phoenix bird from the ashes kind of thing.
And now you don't have any outsourced stuff. You are just two people who are doing everything, right?
Well, previous to that, we reset up Dickie Birds and we started doing white label agency work again. And we did a lot of stuff for the old arts company that we used to work for. They'd split off into two different directions and they needed to do a lot of web work. So thankfully, we just fell on our feet. We parted as friends from our biggest client, and then somehow just work backfilled in. And I think, to be honest, if you've got a team of like 20 people, it's not hard to scale down and still maintain a pipeline for just two.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how we still, ended up with loads of work. What happened was because after we'd been through this kind of turmoil together and he'd helped me so much, we decided, we should meet, Skype wasn't such a thing back then. We said, should we meet in London? I can get the train. It will take me about 3 hours or 2 hours or something like that. And he wanted to fly over and bring his wife and do London and stuff like that. So we met at Luton Airport and we, had some drinks and beers and a good time and everything. And we just decided while we're there, let's start a new company. Let's start an actual branded company that is a, what we used to call a SWAT team for agencies. We would come in if that agency needs to grow and they can't afford the staff. We come in, we do the job or maybe two jobs or three jobs. And then they're building their team in the background.
Mm-hmm.
And then no problem. You don't need us anymore. And call us when you're growing again, So that's what Dickie Birds became for many years.
Okay, now let's talk about the Dickie Birds status as of now. Now, you mentioned that you're following a strict approach to niche down and focus on just two things. One would be just UX alone, and the other would be UX plus WordPress. Now, is this a conscious decision because you want to leverage your expertise as a WP WordPress expert and your partner's expertise in UX?
It is exactly that. I think we discovered when we started Dickie Birds, we probably worked for 6 years, I'd say about 6 years or 7 years doing this white label stuff. And we didn't really get anywhere. We didn't really have like we had a great brand, but we weren't doing anything with it. We were just purely working under the radar and we were just kind of, we'd employed ourselves really, and we weren't hiring any other people or anything like that. After about 6 years, we got a really massive project. It was in UX, actually. It was UX and UI. It wasn't anything to do with websites or WordPress. It was a learning management system for a really big PLC. And not to go into too much detail, but that project was like the biggest budget that we'd ever had. And we really struggled with it. It was, five or six times more money than the biggest project we'd done to that previously. And we just, as a team, weren't really ready for that kind of project because we had lots of other clients as well. Mm-hmm. So we were trying to manage everything. So what we learned from that was we needed to figure out what our thing was, what do we do well? The problem was at that time was that the project was so stressful. And I mean, so stressful that it actually damaged our kind of working relationship as partners. It was one of those kind of situations whereby, it puts so much pressure on us because we got kind of, we ended up trying to outsource all of our WordPress and web design work so that me and him could focus purely on the big job. So we did it again. We tried to scale and this time again, it ended in tears because, I was stressed out, Peter was stressed out, and we just kind of fizzled out Dickie Birds. And that's why you've never heard of Dickie Birds until, 6 months ago, because we more or less just stopped working as that brand. I went off and decided to focus on WordPress, and he decided to go off and focus on UX, and we kind of went our separate ways and just, stayed friends, really.
But now you're together again, right?
Yeah, we were together again. And, you mentioned the WP Blueprint brand that you remember, got created pretty much in the Beaver Builder Facebook group when I tried to redesign my own personal site as a WordPress freelancer. That was a brand that got created for me, and it was kind of, and it's still going. But what happened was, me and Peter ended up double freelancing on a single job for a particular client that we both knew, and I'd already kind of forced Beaver Builder into the project. And Peter was not really into that kind of thing. He was, you know, he would work with CSS, you know, SAS and, you know, pure JavaScript stuff. And because he was tending to do bigger web app type design, whereby there was a team of people and his code would need to be given to someone else.
He had developer bug and you had Beaver bug, right? So
yeah, exactly. But we collaborated on this project and we actually really enjoyed working together. And at that point, because we'd had a couple of years not doing Dickybirds in its old disastrous scaling attempt type of way, he was passionate about what he did and I was passionate about what I did. Whereas the last time we'd worked with each other, we just didn't care about anything anymore. We just, you know, it was just trying to get paid and stuff like that. And so I think we just connected again. We just kind of... And we just, again, we went for a beer or something, and or a Nando's, some chicken or something like that. And we're like, should we, you know, that project was really cool. Should we start Dickybirds again? And it was literally that easy to start it. We just said, should we start Dickybirds again? Because, you know, I'm doing this now, you're doing that. And I said to him, I said, in the WordPress space, Peter, your designs will go down really, really well because you are the best designer I know.
Yeah, as well, because as you did really, really, really good job with Generate Press official side, you know, rebranding and design. It was like a fresh take on the WordPress product site design, because most of the sites that sell digital products in WordPress ecosystem, they have like plain Jane design, like solid lines here and there, but yours was like full of gradients and subtle gradients that looked really good. So now I think Dickybirds is going from strength to strength and you're working stronger and more together. Now, I want to focus on the white label aspect of your business now. Personally, I also do a lot of white label work, but I do it because I don't like communication, the client communication and follow up part. That's not my strength. What is your reason of focusing more on the white label work rather than the direct client work?
For us, restarting Dickybirds as a kind of UX specialist with WordPress and then combining those two skills. You can't just make that decision and then suddenly you've got a load of brand new big clients and, you know, you have to work at that. And so in a way, what we looked at and we said, well, what have we always been really good at? And apart from when we tried to scale and it was white label work. Yeah.
I think, you know, coming together again.
Yeah. It was partnership work with agencies. And I think, we have put a different spin on it now. We used to kind of just, you know, go to a local agency in Birmingham's offices and they would have 5 or 6 folders. And in each of those folders would be a website brief with some PSDs on a CD. Mm-hmm. and we go, here's one project, here's two projects, here's three projects. We'd walked away from the office with like 5 projects and they'd be like, can you get them all done in a month? And we'd be like, yeah, we can do that. You know, and obviously we struggle to do that. So now what we're trying to do now is build the business in 3 different directions. One of them, and I'll mention the white label last, so I'll just quickly mention the other two. The first is pure direct UX and UI work. So Peter does that 4 days a week. He's doing that 4 days a week for non-WordPress clients. The job we're doing at the moment is pure UX. Even with Peter's design skills, he's not using them. He's purely doing the UX stuff for a non-web interface project. It's to do with automobile industry. The job before that was, you know, in houses now you can have like energy smart meters that tell you how much energy you're using. It was the UI and UX for the web portal where you would manage that. And at the moment, the really cool one that I am allowed to mention who it is Content Snare. So we're helping James Rose at Content Snare to redesign the, not the whole thing, just the bit that clients see when they're putting their content into Content Snare. Because that's kind of currently, it's almost like a a simpler version of the admin interface. So Peter's working on that at the moment.
So you have both the direct clients and white label mix as of now, right?
Yeah, the white label stuff that we're doing now is we try to be more of a partner with an agency. So what we've realized over the years, we've usually been going longer than a lot of the agencies that we've partnered with. And so we've got some insights to offer, and we've got processes from working with some of the big clients that we are working with directly, both in WordPress and also in the UX stuff. And we see these kind of agencies come to us a lot of the time, and you'll know this, that they don't have a process. They're just kind of like, they're growing and they've got some designs and they just need to get it done. So I imagine you do this as well, but
yeah, they're mostly good at sales and communication, but when it comes to the technical part, they are almost blank. They will throw everything at you. You know, you go and figure out everything.
That's it. And we're trying to sort of make sure that we can establish a good relationship with our agency partners, whereby we are in the conversation about the projects earlier on.
And your white label clients, are they restricted to UK or it's like all over the world?
No, it's all over the world. We've hardly had any local clients in our actual localized area for a long time. They've always been throughout the UK.
And what kind of projects do you do under the white label part of your business? Like, is it like e-commerce website, brochure website? Like, do you have any specialization there as well?
Yeah, definitely. Not specialization as such. It's more like the things that we don't specialize in. So we tend to avoid e-commerce websites as white label. And I know you know why. And I know you're going to know exactly what I'm talking about now. Yeah. That in a situation where an agency is good at sales, they will sell an e-commerce website. But I think an e-commerce website needs a genuine consultant who understands e-commerce to be able to deliver that.
It requires more care because money is involved. And if your site breaks, the person will be hell-bent angry because he's losing money on a daily basis.
Exactly. I think the difference between an e-commerce site and a brochure site is the e-commerce site is often the business. So if that website goes down, the business is down. Whereas if the brochure site goes down,
not much happens.
It's quite a drama. You know, it's not so bad.
So outside WordPress, like once you handle that UX design in a project, do you leave the client to hire a developer from outside, or you also pitch in your design development services where you only was hired to do UX in the first place?
The UX projects are so different in structure to the WordPress projects, even though our WordPress projects have a lot of UX in them. Because we've learned that, and we may as well apply those philosophies to that kind of design work that we do. Mm-hmm. The UX work at the moment in the UK, I think there must be a big demand for it, because typically what happens is we're working on something quite huge, usually that lasts, you know, 6 months, 9 months, or something like that. So our current major UX contract at the moment runs until April next year, and we would probably be able to renew someone if we wanted to. So long as we don't get fired or something like that. The difference is that usually we're coming into a bigger team. So it's almost like a team that's been pulled together. Sometimes there's some people internally who've got, you know, the business goals, they're committing the business goals. And then there is, you know, hired UX specialists and UI specialists and translation specialists. So the one we're working on at the moment is pretty huge, and there is a team of people who are managing the translation of this system into 42 different languages. Mm-hmm. And so we're just continually contributing to that project. So it's almost like contracting, you know, the kind of traditional IT contracting, where IT contractors go in and, you know, create a computer network in a big building or something like that. It tends to be more like that. Rather than, apart from with contents now, you know, those sort of jobs are the smaller jobs whereby we're able to, in that case, with those sort of UI jobs, if we were doing UI for like a SaaS company or something like contents now, we probably would deliver the deliverables. And in terms of what that looks like, it's usually the flows. If we're doing the UI as well, it would be the flows, and something what we call the design, what's it called again? it's like the design library as such. So it contains, it's not the right word. I'll think of the right word in a minute. A design system. It's a design system. So basically it includes like, it's almost like brand guidelines, what we, you know, what you see in brand guidelines, but for the entire user interface and user experience and stuff. So you'll have, this is how all the sidebars should look. This is how these, you know, when this happens, it will be this color with this icon and stuff. So it's a big document with lots of information. So the developer, because we don't develop it, gets a really, really good brief, much better than the briefs we get for our WordPress sites.
Oh, WordPress, I just want a simple website, right? That's about it.
Can you make it awesome?
Yeah.
Can you make it snappy and all this stuff? Whatever, some keywords, some cool words.
Yeah, it's not moving. It's not fancy, you know. You need to add some movement there. Okay, now let's talk about the scope of the project. Now, you mentioned previously, like, you got a big project which you were not able to handle, primarily because you had other projects to handle which were smaller in scope, and you got excited and focused all your energy on the bigger one, and everything got a little messed up. Now, when you do white label work, what kind of scope of projects you say yes, and what you say no?
Yep. So I know that I've listened to you talk about this before in terms of like scope of projects and what you think is a good fit. Yeah. And we will do any scope of project as long as we know that the agency, it's in their scope. So I think that's the issue usually, is that if the agency looks like they're completely out of their depth, then we will just advise them, this isn't a good thing to do. You know, we know the projects you normally do and they're like this, you know, this is, you know, and you can tell by the questions they're asking you, you know, the same questions, how long will this take? And what about this? Can we just do this? Can we just do that? And they're starting to suggest corner cutting exercises that maybe we can do as developers for them. And we're saying, no, you can't do that. No, that's not a good idea. So what we try and do is kind of these smaller to medium projects, because anything that is a brochure site, it can scale up and it can scale back down. But because we can advise, because we also, just like you do, also do design work as white label, we can design, you know, a brief might come to us that has 200 pages in it, and we can condense that down to 40 pages as a better solution, because we're actually hired to, you know, create a solution as well. So we try and make a project as workable as possible and scale it down and keep within the scope of what is everyone is comfortable and capable of doing.
And now let's talk about the pricing of white label projects. Now, there's a project that you're doing on a white label basis, and you can have the similar project on a direct client basis. What is the price difference between both of them?
Yeah, so it's a tricky one, because one of the reasons we've focused on a bit more white label in the last 6 months or something is because we've been fairly consistent with pricing with white label. Whereas our direct client work has gone from super amazing budgets to absolutely appalling budgets. So, you know, and you know, so we've kind of said, okay, let's just stop doing those super bad budget direct client
projects. That's why I ask you this question, because normally when you do a white label work, there is a premium of say like 20 to 40% if you do the same kind of work as a direct client. Because when you're doing a white label work for an agency is a better seller of a similar scope project at a higher price compared to you or I being a direct, you know, handling a direct client. So I believe you can command better pricing, or I should say consistent pricing, that there's no big ups and downs when dealing with white label work coming from an agency.
I don't even think it's so much about the pricing. I think it's the level of profit that you can make, because I think with white labeling, you know exactly what you're doing. That you can make some, you know, mistakes, but you can fix those easily. I think when you're working with a direct client project, if there isn't a big enough budget, then the amount of mistakes you make will directly impact on your profit, to the point that you can end up with no profit on a project sometimes. And when I say mistakes, I don't mean like coding or design mistakes. I mean kind of mistakes in
conceptual process wise.
Yeah, just, you know, oh, surprises that you think, right, that's a surprise, you know, the agency has given to me about this project now. It's not my fault, but I probably should have asked better questions about the project at the beginning. You know, those sort of questions with agency white label stuff, it's normally kind of with the kind of scope of projects, it was smaller to medium projects.
Yeah.
It's Beaver Builder, it's you know, it's some hooks and filters, it's some CSS. You can change the scope of the project without too much impact. But when you're doing direct work, if the client changes the whole business focus of a project and you have to try and absorb that problem, then that's a problem.
So that is why I love white label agency work. Why? Because the scope is fixed. Even if it will change, it won't change like mountain to ocean. Yeah. You know, it will still be a little bit, but when you're doing the direct client work and you are doing the client commission, oh, I forgot to mention this, and you've already paid the first milestone and you are now in a soup. Like, how do I say no to him? Because if the same thing happens with an agency, I'm not answerable. Agency has to, you know, adjust the budget and accordingly.
That's right.
That's why I love white label work. I'm sure you do too.
I do. Yeah, we do really like it. We do really like our direct client work there as well now, because we've starting to get the process right for and position, you know, position ourselves more of an expert in this. Whereas before, you know, 2 years ago or the previous version of Dicky Birds, we had no status whatsoever. But you know, now we can position ourselves. We've got some credibility. We've done some things. We've been on some interviews. We've wrote some guest blog posts. We've, you know, got some big name clients and stuff like that. So we're able to prove that we know what we're doing to a certain extent. So we're trying to attract clients that already see us as an authority if we can. It means we've had to kind of drop a lot of our smaller inquiries because they just don't fit anymore. They just don't fit. And we will just end up messing up the rest of our work. So we do like it. We love the white label stuff. And our end goal really is that we will be able to do some big UX contracts in, say, a year from now that aren't so much us going in and contributing. They're us direct creative director type situation for companies with their UX needs.
Mm-hmm.
Strategy for them. Right now, we're kind of earning our stars at the moment.
So as of now, when you are doing a white label project for a company, now, do you ever interact with the end user client by posing on company's behalf or the agency behalf, or all the communication is handled by the agency staff itself?
Usually, we've got some communication with the end client,
okay.
But we do try to shield where that direction goes. It's normally quite one directional.
Mm-hmm.
So it's normally me talking to them. So for instance, if we're doing design work for white label, most of the clients I work with on white label will agree that it's better to be transparent, not completely transparent, but you know, the whole associate model, works for them. And so I'm working for that company, but they're aware that I am a contractor. Sort of thing, but I'm a kind of permanent contractor. So let's say I do a design or something. So whenever I do designs for clients, I always present that in a specific way. We post a note, you know, in Basecamp or whatever system the client is using, mm-hmm. and it'll be a description about a couple of things. And then there will be a video that's uploaded unlisted video in YouTube. And they will watch the video first. And it's me talking through the design and prompting the things that I want them to respond to. So here's the header. I've moved this thing here and that thing there. The reason I did that is because of this. What do you think about that idea? Is that going to work for you, or is that going to cause a problem? And then we move down the page. And then, so I try to not talk about the design. I try and talk about the solution. And then at the end of the video, I say, I hope none of my clients are watching this because they'll know the trick. At the end of the video, I say, you'll find the link to the design in the description in the YouTube video underneath. And so that's the thing that they want to see, but they can't get to that until they've heard me talk to them for 5 minutes, you know, about what I, you know, get them ready to see it in the right way.
And clients never expand the YouTube description before watching the video. That's clever, or I should say smart policy, right?
It's most of the smart ideas that I have are born through desperation and pain. So that's where that idea came from. And then the link is always to a Project Huddle. We use Project Huddle at the moment. Goes to Project Huddle. The thing doesn't scale. You know, it just sits there in the right size in desktop mode or mobile mode if they're looking at that.
Man.
And they've got the same questions in the bullet points to answer. So it's all...
I just can't resist saying this life teaches everything, be it online or offline world, man. So this is how smartly you work with clients. But now let's focus back to the agency with which you are dealing with the white label project. Now let's talk about the money part. Now, do you split it in milestones? Do you take prepayment? How does normally your project with an agency on a white label basis work in terms of money part?
So we almost try and we always try to negotiate something healthy for everyone. The relationship is different for every agency that we work with, because what we're trying to do is help them grow so they can get better, bigger projects that we get paid more for. So we tend to kind of look at a sort of percentage value of the project, depending on what it is that we're doing. And that gives us, you know, the incentive to then help them pitch for the best value project that they can get by us helping them. So most of the time we'll try and go for something like a 40% and then a 60% type payment system.
Uh-huh.
Some of the new agencies that, you know, especially if they're kind of, you know, just a single freelancer or something that we're working for, they might have some good clients, but they haven't got their own budget system in line, you know, and they're getting paid at the end of everything. We'll try to help them change that through the advice that we can give them so that we can get a down payment on the project. And then we also try and introduce for those agencies and loads of agents. We're also trying to introduce the, you know, the care plans to the agencies as well via us.
Yeah.
That's where transparency is important.
I was coming to the care plans as well, because now once you've done the project for agency on white label basis, I believe you also handle the maintenance and care for at least few of the project, if not all.
Most of them. Now, I think the reason it's important to us is because, you know, I think if I was a developer on Odesk or one of those platforms, then I wouldn't obviously do that. I would have done what I needed to do for the project and then I would disappear. But I think now it's difficult to make a WordPress site that if it doesn't have some kind of stabilizers connected to it, it's going to fall over no matter how well you code it. There's too many moving parts. There's plugins, there's themes, there's Gutenberg. So there's different things happening. There's hosting companies changing rules, you know, and stuff like that. And so we know that it will come back to us as a problem if we don't sell that concept.
So it's natural that in maintenance and care plans also there's a split between you and the agency, right? And the agency is handling the most communication, at least the forward-facing communication.
Most of the time. It depends from... So, for instance, like the larger agencies, and when I say a larger agency, I mean kind of like two or three people or something like that versus like a one-person agency. They will tend to want to handle that communication because they're in that growth period themselves where they're trying to make themselves look bigger than a one-person company, and that they've got management structure and they do that kind of client-facing stuff and they're always upselling. So in those scenarios, we make sure, you know, that'll be a situation. Like I've got one client, for instance, where we adjust the Stripe payment every time we do a new project because another project will be on the plan. Mm-hmm. And so this particular client already knows how to sell the care plan to his client, and we'll get a new project in and it will almost be a given that they're going to have a care plan. And then that just gets added to my care plan system, and he's paying me direct and he's marking that up and charging the client. But for that, he is taking those inbound messages and passing them on to me, which is fine.
And what do you use for the project management and communication? Do you use a tool like Asana or something else?
Yeah, so if the agency's got their own tool, we use that. But surprisingly, a lot of them don't have their own tool.
Because they are busy with sales and marketing, most of them.
Yeah, exactly. You know, they're struggling for time. And, you know, when you're struggling for time, putting good tools in place is difficult. So My favorite tool at the moment is FreedCamp, and I've used that for a long time. I really like FreedCamp. My clients seem to like it. The agencies I work with seem to like it. I'm trying out Plutio as well because I got that deal when that deal was going.
AppSumo grab.
And it was an AppSumo one, yeah. And it's got a lovely user interface. But FreeCamp is just so mature as a product, and it just works so well. So we tend to use that. And we have most conversations started as a to-do item because FreeCamp gives you all the communication tools you need, even for one to-do item, you know, subtasks and stuff like that. So then we can wrap up a conversation is done. You know, that conversation
and,
is done.
And manage websites, manage WP or main WP, or you've got some secret tool?
No secret tool. So I'm a big fan of manage WP. Okay. I like that it's in the cloud and it's just kind of done for you versus main WP.
I love off hosted solutions, to be honest. Yeah. All kinds of be it courses, or even there are people who like main WP, but then there are people who like managed WP, like you and me and many more. Okay, now I'm going to ask you one very classic question. And a lot of people ask this and struggle on this, but I'm going to give a white label twist to it. Like, how do you get new white label clients? Now, a lot of people struggle getting clients now. Do you go to networking events, splurge on paid marketing, cold emailing? Man, there are so many things I can list out, but what is the policy way?
The old Dicky Bird's way was we were just known for it. So it was word of mouth and one person leaving an agency and going to another. I think the agencies we used to work for back then were big agencies like 20 to 40 different people and stuff. So there'd be a lot of project managers who we became friends with who would move from this massive agency to that massive agency.
And take their power with them.
Yes. Yeah. They'd take some of the clients over and they'd also then pull us into it because they were comfortable working with us. So we'd always know that they were leaving that job way before the company knew they were leaving the job. And they, you know, we'd already had a meeting about moving over and stuff. Now it's a lot different now. Thinking about it, there's some that are still our clients from way back who are just giving us constant projects. But all of our new white label clients are coming through I don't want to call it work, but the things and actions that I've done online in the WordPress space, in the Facebook groups, in Beaver Builder.
Like GeneratePress and
GeneratePress.
Content Snap would be next. And then I have another surprise. I'll see if you tell me that, but I won't spill the beans.
Okay, that's okay.
So it's all word of mouth. So you're not doing any extra effort to get new clients, right?
It's kind of, I think that doing this, and like I say, it wasn't work, it wasn't intentional. It was just passion doing, you know, GeneratePress, Beaver Builder, WordPress, you know, podcasts and YouTube and stuff like that. I just enjoy doing it. And it's just brought inbound inquiries and leads that I never expected from. And this is why a lot of our clients are around the world now, because, you know, this whole WordPress community is completely global. But sometimes we will see in a Facebook group someone saying, you know, I'm looking for someone who knows Beaver Builder or something, or I'm looking for someone who works with GeneratePress or something like that. And we were able to send a private message to that person with all the credentials that you would ever need to be a fantastic candidate for that project. You know, because we're working with Beaver Builder and we're working with GeneratePress as clients and partners, as well as using the tool. So it positions us really strongly for that. And it's, I think when someone's looking to outsource, they're stressed. They've got a job here that's difficult, which is to try and find someone that they genuinely feel they can trust.
Yeah, it's not easy, man. Not easy because sometimes even I outsource certain parts of a project, but I only outsource to those people who I already know that they can handle that part of the project. Because I would rarely do it to a person who's new. I may test it with a small little bit of project, but not with something that's critical and that has to be delivered on a deadline. So now you are two guys who are handling Dickie Birds. Now do you also subcontract certain part of the project to, say, some remote employees or some contractors?
Not really anymore. There's actually four of us employed. There is me and Peter as the co-founders, and we installed someone. I think I'm working too long in this industry now. We installed the plugin, and we employed a guy called Adrian who was at WordCamp. He was at WordCamp London.
What's his version number?
he's early, but he's got a lot of potential. He's like version 1.2.
Yeah,
but
I'm talking in the same language now, man.
Yeah, I know. he's a WordPress developer, and he's really good at Beaver Builder, and he's actually a better coder than I am, which is great. And you know, he can do JavaScript, and I suck at JavaScript, everyone does.
I often find people who are better coder than me, so that's not surprising. We all have this. I know a lot of people who are certainly better than me in code because it's their passion. My passion is something else. My passion is like building things rather than building bricks. I prefer to build a house. That's my passion. So I guess you are on the same kind of a platform because...
Yeah.
You like building things. Now, coming to building things, now I know about Generate Press. Everyone knows about it. You told about Content Snare. Did I miss anything else?
What, in terms of core projects that we're doing?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, there is one. I'm wearing the wrong baseball cap today. There's this one as well. Is that come around backwards for you? That's backwards for me. But so I'm wearing the WordPress cap today. But yeah, there was this really, really cool opportunity that happened when we started this idea. When Adrian joined the company, right, I needed to somehow teach him Beaver Builder. And I didn't really have any time. So I put him on we came up with this kind of side project idea of how about we create a whole load of like different rows and templates and stuff for Beaver Builder. There's a big backstory about how that actually started, which I talked about on the Dorothy Elevation podcast that you watched the other day on Facebook Live. Mm-hmm. I don't think that's live yet, but that originally started as a kind of a collaboration between me and Barna Booksborn. A guy you know Barna.
Katka template.
That's right. He created a template pack for Elementor that's just expanding all the time and really amazing. So we met at WordPress, WordCamp Manchester, and became really good friends. And we had a conversation one day about how about a Beaver Builder version of the Katka template kit? Because, we know that there's the template kits with UABB and PowerPack and stuff, and I think those are really good template packs if you are in a kind of turnkey mode and you need a quick design. But for the more developer or sort of pro designer or something, you tend to want more like just almost like building blocks with very, very light style that you can adapt very quickly. So we decided to do this. We created this. Barna was way ahead of us, and Adrian joined the company. I was like, Adrian, right, download Katka and start copying all the rows. And which was agreed. That's what we were going to do because we were going to, have – it was Katka and what we called Beaver Kit because that's what we were going to call it.
You were going to make a Beaver Builder version of the Katka template pack, which
exactly.
is for Elementor, yeah. right?
It's for Elementor, yeah. So, and what was really nice about that project, if you've ever seen Rocky IV, the Russian and Rocky, there's Dolph Lundgren and Rocky, they have like a big fight and everyone hates each other, much like the Beaver Builder and Elementor community have this like fake war going on or whatever. But at the end of the film, Rocky, does a speech and he's kind of like, if you can change and I can change, we can all change. So we always thought it was a kind of funny joke that the Elementor guy and the Beaver Builder guy were going to work together.
But this is true, man. Elementor person would say Elementor is the best. Beaver one would say Beaver is the best. But they won't say the other one is bad. I've never seen a person saying the other one is bad. It's just
that's true.
I think the only thing that that keeps people loyal to a platform is this: you are invested into it, you've learned that tool, and now you don't want to spend energy in learning another tool. So
exactly. But the crazy thing that happened next, though, was that we I showed it. I mean, I talked to you about BeaverKit because we were, you know, I remember I was asking you, will you help us design a website at one point, because we were too busy to do stuff. And I thought,
and I did say yes.
You did say yes, and because you were, you know, the best designer that I could think of.
Just say it again. I'm gonna frame it somewhere if audio is possible.
Definitely. Yeah, you can frame a moving picture. You get one of those moving things and put a subtitle on it. No, your design is awesome, especially what you've been doing in the last 12 months. It's just really gone from strength to strength, and I'm always checking out your designs. What you've done for Kim Doyle's website is absolutely stunning.
Yeah, that was a fun project, to be honest, because I didn't have any brief. I just had a logo and make something according to my personality. And I know Kim for quite some time now, so I knew what kind of design she would like. So.
Oh, yeah, it's awesome. It is beautiful. But yeah, well, what happened was we started talking to a few people like you about what we're doing, people we could trust, you know, and everything. They would just say, we're doing this idea and everything. And talked to a few other people who were friends with the guys at Beaver Builder. And I think what happened was WordCamp London was coming up. And then we knew that the Beaver Builder guys were coming and we were going to be going anyway. And I think some friends, probably like Nathan Wrigley or David Wormsley or one of our mutual friends, was started saying to me, you know, you really should show what you're doing to the Beaver Builder guys. And I didn't know them at this point. I'd never befriended them on Facebook because I always, you know, saw them as like these gods who I must not befriend them on Facebook because they're too awesome.
Same here.
I'm not worthy.
it's difficult to press the, you know, friend request button on such people because we have this feeling of, oh man, but then that's true also. They've achieved something good, at least in the online world that we know about.
Exactly. Yeah, that's it. And so I didn't want to. I could see that when I go to Facebook, the guys from Beaver Builder are constantly at the top of the list of people who I should befriend, according to Facebook's algorithm, because everyone I know is friends with them on Facebook. And so I was always like, no, I'm not doing it. I'm not pressing the button. I'm not pressing, you know, befriend. Because what if they say no? What if they say no?
Facebook doesn't provide that answer. No, there's no answer. No. Either that you accept it or you just let it sit there.
I know. There's no reason. There's no feedback. But somehow, anyway, I ended up talking to Robbie online. I mentioned, you know, we're going to a WordCamp. It'd be great to meet up with you. And he kind of replied back saying, you know, I've heard about what you're working on and stuff. And I've seen loads of your videos and everything. Thanks for everything. And I was really over the moon with, you know, kind of joy when he said that, because I just thought, oh, you know, they've noticed that, you know, we've been doing some stuff and they appreciate it. And it's nice to know. That's not what matters the most, but it's nice to know that, you know, that they're appreciating what we're trying to do and stuff. So we met up with the guys at Beaver Builder at WordCamp. You know, there was a big party. I've got some photos of, you know, pictures of my laptop balanced on a pint glass and stuff like that. I wasn't even there at that part. But I sat down with Justin and Adrian. Me and Adrian sat down with Justin and Robbie. Mm-hmm. I don't know where Peter was at this point. And we just showed them what we were doing and our ideas. And Justin was like, you know, we're launching this new Beaver Builder 2.2. It's going to be very design focused, which is true. We've seen it now. It's awesome. You know, we all love it. And he said, you know, we've been thinking about getting some templates and stuff in there. And could we maybe hire you guys to do that? And we were like, yeah, but you know, we don't really want to get hired for this. We'd just rather collaborate with you at this point. And you know, let's just do it as a kind of open collaboration. So I didn't really want to associate money with this because it was almost like such an amazing opportunity. And for us, when we came up with the idea of BeaverKit, it was a positioning exercise. You know, we thought, okay, if we create BeaverKit, agencies will use that. And then agencies will know that we do white label work and they know that we create BeaverKit. So that's a great match. You know, we're a great match with that agency who uses our product. So the box would have been, the box was completely ticked for us, you know, in terms of achieving profile, if we were able to, you know, do the official Beaver Builder rows.
So have you done those rows design? Yeah. Or is it like still work in progress?
There's a few tweaks to make on them and stuff. Like, so now, for instance, you can, I didn't even realize you could do this before, and I think it's been possible for a while. You can save a Beaver Builder row, and if you give it a thumbnail, then it appears in the dropdown. And you can already also categorize it and stuff like that. Yeah. So we're just doing the thumbnails at the moment.
Yeah,
we're doing all the thumbnails, which is, you know, a big job in itself, really. But the cool thing, though, was that we still can do something with our Beaver Kit original idea, because the guys at Beaver Builder, you know, they don't want 200 rows and 500 templates. They've never been that. They've always been, you know, let's take things slowly. Let's give the building blocks. Let's give what developers, you know, think about developers and pro designers, because a saved row is a post at the end of the day. So if you make a Beaver Builder load in 200 brand new designed rows, you've got 200 posts in your WordPress install straight away. Okay. So there's probably going to only be about 60 or 70 mm-hmm. Of, you know, kind of the classic rows that you will always use on almost every project. And we actually designed about 150. So we've had to shortlist those, which has given us a load of other ones. And then it's made us think, maybe we can do something with BeaverKit again and look at creating niche packs and stuff like that. So first things first, finish the Beaver Builder main project, and then and see what we can do with BeaverKit there.
These will release when the new version of Beaver Builder comes out, or after that?
Yeah, I think they'll be in 2.2 in the release, because it's already built. The 2.2 release is already ready for it. It's just, we've just got to import. They've just got to be imported and tested a little bit, really.
Yeah, because I think it just hit alpha version last week, so I'm still. Yeah. I think it's safe to assume like it will still take 2 months. Maybe end of November or December we'll see the real version come out, probably.
Yeah, I think you're probably right, because I think the difference between, like, say, Elementor and Beaver Builder is Beaver Builder and, you know, with, this isn't a bad word against Elementor, but Elementor seems to have everything it needs inside Elementor, whereas Beaver Builder, it's a lot of people are dependent on major add-on packs and stuff like that, UAB and Power Pack.
But so I like it, man, because Beaver Builder is lean, yeah. And I like the clean part of it. And a lot of people use it. A lot of agency people use it because of this specific reason. And if you want to compare Beaver Builder with a tortoise and Elementor with some fast moving animal, I don't mind that. Yeah. But, you know, I think both have their own strengths. Elementor.
I do.
And I think with new version of Beaver Builder, you can add that all kind of fanciness that people say is missing in Elementor. I think you can get a little more fancy with Beaver Builder if you know how to use those. I've tried the alpha version. Like, you can, you know, put all kinds of color splashes, all kinds of, you know, row dividers and all that. So Beaver Builder, exciting. So let's talk about other tools. Like, what are your current 5 favorite tools that power your online business?
Okay, that's a tough one. Do we include Beaver Builder in that? I mean, or do we? Should we just exclude Beaver Builder for it's we, clearly the most we, you know?
We can exclude the Beaver Builder and put in Elementor if you want.
No. No, let's stick Beaver Builder and GeneratePress in there straight away. Mm-hmm. I mean, not just because I work with those companies. I work with those companies because I loved their products first and foremost, and I was a massive advocate of those products. So those two products are probably the most important. Then I think I've got 5. This is brilliant. Lee Jackson only gives you 1, doesn't he? So it's difficult. I think exactly which tool I'm using in the long term, I don't think is decided, but I really like the AppSumo deal that came up for Lemlist.
Okay. What's the tool about?
Lemlist is like an email drip campaign creator. Okay. Very, very simple. So you can, you know, drop someone in a campaign, mm-hmm. and then it will send off a couple of emails. In sequence over a certain amount of days. So I don't use it for any newsletter stuff. It connects to your Google Mail account as well. And it's purely for instance, when we're doing like client onboarding or mm-hmm. we're doing like even sales kind of thing. So let's say we get an inquiry, we can just drop someone's email address in the onboarding inquiry, and that will automatically send them, you know, because I'm doing WP Elevation at the moment. And so I'm automating some of the WP Elevation blueprint using my CRM and Lemlist to get those emails coming out. And then I can just tag someone in the CRM and that will talk to Lemlist. So if they answered, I don't want them to get the reminder, hey, you haven't answered my email. It stops them.
Which CRM do you use?
So at the moment I'm using Company Hub. It was another lifetime deal type of thing. It's called Company Hub and it's really, really good. But I'm waiting for a CRM to mature a bit more and an email system called Allure, who I'm friends with their CEO.
I've seen it.
It's very early at the moment, but it looks like it has a very simple way of doing almost everything I ever do. I don't need a big sales-based CRM. I just need something simple. And that looks like a good option for me in the future. But for the moment, Company Hub and Lemlist is what I'm using. And so, FreeCamp.
So they come on number 4 and 5, right? Or you have some other tools?
Well, let's combine Lemlist and Company Hub. So that's, and then I'll give 2 more.
Okay, so what is your recommended web hosting service?
At the moment, I'm loving Cloudways. I've been through some other companies. I've been through SiteGround. I think they were good. I think they're very good at the shared hosting level, and I'm not sure quite honestly how long shared hosting as a concept will keep going. I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong about this, but it just feels like it's something designed for the websites of old. And now at the moment it's almost like, you know, when you get like a Porsche car, it's like a VPS, right? It's got a big engine. And it's naturally a spirited engine. Whereas SiteGround feels like a Subaru Impreza Turbo. It's a 2-liter saloon car with a huge turbo on it to make it go faster.
And which car would be dedicated server?
That would be something like...
maybe Airbus aeroplane, right?
Yeah, exactly. So I really like Cloudways combined with Vulture at the moment. I also like WP Engine. But they've kind of, for now, priced me out of growth with WP Engine.
Yeah.
They were great as they were, and they've changed their direction, which is absolutely fine. It's just that the direction they've gone isn't right for me moving forward.
Yeah, the pricing is almost double if you go for the... Initially, you would buy the same price. You will buy 10 sites back. Now it's like 5 sites. So almost your pricing is double, and you would never go for the single site plan because it won't fit your requirement. So
no. I think there's other options now that compete with them really, really aggressively.
Yeah, there's Liquid Web, there's Kinstar, there's so many of them who are now specialized, and they all seem to have positive reviews. Obviously, you will find one odd person not liking a specific hosting service, which is fine. Now, I'm going to skip the next question, which is your favorite page builder. I think we already know about it, but...
Just in case, it's Beaver Builder.
Okay. And what is your favorite email marketing service? Do you use any email marketing thing in your business?
Do you know, not for email marketing, no. So I've got a MailChimp account, and I've got a couple of people, you know, I've got an account, and there's some people in that. That have come through a little kind of lead gen form that I put on, that if you find my website via generatepress.com, then it pops up a message saying, you know, would you like to know about future GeneratePress sites that we're doing? Because we've done the GeneratePress site library, I contributed to that. And but really, I think I'm probably going to skip email marketing altogether, pretty much. And so we use Lemlist, which is not an email marketing tool. It's an email automation tool for, you know, like I said, onboarding.
I guess just like ConvertKit, like you can make a campaign and target, you know, send certain emails one after the other to a specific list or list with certain tags.
Exactly. I think I learned a lot from Erin Flynn. She did a really great webinar on what she calls the email funnel, and she uses ConvertKit for that. Mm-hmm. And so I kind of took that concept that she did on a webinar once and applied it to Lemlist because I'd got that product. So you can use the two tools for very similar things. You just can't use Lemlist for your newsletter, which you can use ConvertKit for your newsletter.
Okay. So now the last question. What are your future expectations, targets with regard to your online journey?
Business or anything?
Obviously, it's business. Online equals business. Offline equals pets, family, and a lot other things.
You're right. Pets. you know, we're kind of looking ahead to around June next year. That's when we think we're going to be in a really good position whereby we've established ourselves as an authority as much as we need to be comfortable to target certain client niches or target certain project types or project sizes and discover over that time exactly what we want. One of the reasons we think about June next year is because our major UX contract that does pay, you know, almost 50% of our monthly income comes from this one contract, will last us all the way to April next year. So we're kind of looking ahead that, you know, what will we do then? You know, will we be in a position where we can do some direct consulting for UX, or will we seek to, you know, get double the kind of value for the contract type work and carry on doing contracting on the UX stuff? Because at the moment we chose to work with a particular client, which is Land Rover Jaguar. So we can't say exactly what we're doing, but that's who we're working with. And we chose them because they were our direct client. So the previous UX contracts that we'd done for big clients were essentially us white labeling for another UX agency, but at a high level. So we chose that. We get less money than we did doing the white label UX work, but we hope that in a year's time from now, or in June next year, we can be in the position of those UX agencies that hired us 3 or 4 months ago, who were commanding who knows what they were charging, you know, because they were paying us quite well. So
those were like your online plans. About offline plans, any more cats? Maybe one.
Well, that was the online plans for UX, but for WordPress, we just want to have some really good agency partners that we're doing nice, enjoyable stuff. We're helping those agencies grow and we're growing at the same time. And we want to have some nice direct client work as well, which we're starting to get now. Even in the WordPress space, it's, you know, if we can work with a client like GeneratePress and we can work with a client like Beaver Builder, mm-hmm. you know, those kind of, or Content Snare and stuff like that, it'd be fantastic if we start picking up clients that are companies we are in awe of because for what they do, and they want to hire our skills. Mm-hmm. But yeah, going to the offline world.
I'm interested in your cats only. That's it. You know, any more cats? One with Gutenberg has to be there. You know, you need to get one kitten.
Well, perhaps. I mean, my wife is very interested in getting a dog, and I keep finding her on dog websites. Unlike rescue dogs, she wants a, because there's this thing in the UK, it's probably, I don't know how much it's outside of the UK, but there's like this greyhound racing sport where, you know, the dogs run around a track.
Yeah.
And what tends to happen in that sport is that a lot of the dogs
get injured and
abandoned. Yeah, they get injured and then they're no good. And, you know, to the owners and stuff like that, because the owners don't see them as pets. They're just financial tools, you know. So there's a lot of kind of companies and charities that rescue greyhounds. And Lindsay, my wife, really, really wants a greyhound.
But it's a big dog for a, you know, house pet.
It is, yeah. We could get a whippet, which is a smaller version of a greyhound. But we also want some chickens because we've got a very long garden. We've got this kind of traditional old house. They're called terrace houses. You know, it's like all the houses are connected in a row going up a hill. And for whatever reason, those gardens, I think they used to always contain things like vegetable patches. But we grew a lot of vegetables this year in our garden. It was amazing. We grew tomatoes and beans and some peppers and stuff like that, and strawberries and mints and herbs. So we're thinking that we keep pulling in food from the garden to eat, you know, with the salads. And we were saying, it'd be kind of cool if we had some eggs as well. So in the same way you can rescue greyhounds, in the UK, you can rescue chickens. Okay. So they're chickens that have been, you know, used in what we call battery hens. So they've been in like these tiny, tiny cages.
Yeah.
You know, they've lost all their feathers. They look like terrible. And these charities buy them so that they don't die. And then people rescue them. And you rescue this chicken that's got no feathers. And then you nurture this chicken. And it grows its feathers back. It gets to run around your garden. And then it starts laying eggs for you and you start eating the eggs. So yes is the answer. We have plans for more animals.
That's so cool. Okay, Paul, thank you very much for your time. And
thanks, Davinder. Thank you.
It was amazing talking to you. Have a good day.
You too.
You can join the free web creators community to learn and share with other web creators at webcreatorsgroup.com. And for more goodness, just head over to smartwebcreators.com. And remember, be smart, keep creating. See you next time.